Politics. I'm ABC News political director Rick Klein, and our guest today is Ben Bradley Jr., the author of a brand new book, The Forgotten, How the People of One Pennsylvania County Elected Donald Trump and Changed America. Ben, my former colleague at the Boston Globe, congratulations on the book and welcome.
Thanks, Rick. Good to see you.
So, Ben, I want to start with how you chose this county. Pennsylvania was a critical state for President Trump. He ended up winning the state by 44,000 votes. And you chose a particular county, Luzerne County. Tell us a little bit about why you decided to focus your reporting on this corner of Pennsylvania.
Well, I've been, like many, most journalists, I guess, fascinated by the emergence of Trump and this unusual, totally different candidate who not only won the Republican nomination but got elected president. And I was looking for a different way to write about the Trump phenomenon and examine more closely the three Rust Belt states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, where the election was decided. And, you know, that was only 77,000 odd votes that Trump won those states by a total. And if Hillary had won them, she would have been the president.
Right.
So looking at Pennsylvania seemed to be the most important to me because it had the most electoral votes, 20. And Hillary considered it absolutely her firewall. You know, she'd been raised in Scranton, which is just over the county line, and family there. Biden was from there. Looking at that vote, I discovered this county, Luzerne, which is where Wilkes-Barre is. And this was a traditionally Democratic county that had gone for, hadn't voted Republican president since 88, Bush Sr. And Obama had carried it twice, but it surged in the other direction for Trump. And he won it by 20 points, by 26,000 odd votes, which was 60% of the 44,000 vote total that you mentioned. So that 60% of his victory margin came from this one county. So without this county, he wouldn't have won Pennsylvania or perhaps the presidency to the extent that Michigan and Wisconsin's demographics are similar. So I just went down there right after the election, less than a month, I think, and began nosing around with a view to seeing if this could be a prism through which to examine the Trump vote. My basic premise was that I think more than half the country remains shocked that Trump got elected president and that there's a hunger to know more about the Trump voter.
So it strikes me that you identify 12 different characters that you use to tell these stories. And it's a diverse mix, as you know, a veteran, a lawyer, all the way through a nurse, even a white nationalist, a white supremacist in there, a congressman as well. It struck me one through line was you hear from these people, they felt like their voice wasn't heard before. Mm. They felt like there was no politician that was speaking to them. What did you feel like unites the stories of why President Trump gave them the voice when he was candidate Trump?
Well, I think that's an important question. These people felt ignored. And there remains a rural-urban divide in this country. You look at the map of the country, county by county, and it's just a sea of red. So I think it's a center-right country. And they felt unacknowledged. They felt underappreciated, isolated by a liberal culture that often mocked them. And Trump came along, and they identified with him. They felt that he heard them. And one of my characters said, "You know, you fall in love with your therapist." They felt listened to. Mm-hmm. And they felt that Hillary made them feel ashamed.
Yeah, one quote that struck me from one of your characters was that we felt like elitists were laughing at us, and that hurt me.
Yes,
that's really striking.
Yeah, that was Lynette Bellano, and her story was particularly interesting because she had a falling out in her family. You know, this election split families. And that was one of the most interesting things about the election. And she had a falling out with her grandson over the election. She went and texted him the next morning after the election, saying how happy she was that Trump had won. And the kid came back hard and just said, this is the worst thing that I've ever seen. And Trump is, you know, the devil incarnate. And that raw, she gave me the text exchange. And I thought that that dialogue really perfectly summarized the philosophical divide that still exists in this country.
Yeah, your point about the number of counties, I think, is an apt one. And I've in studying the map, President Trump didn't win a landslide. In fact, as you know, he lost the popular vote. But he did win a landslide of counties.
In the counties.
Yeah.
He won 2,584 to Hillary's 400-something.
And that sea of red that you see. And I'll say, as someone that did a fair bit of driving through Pennsylvania, I continue to make trips like this, including through the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area, I noticed all those lawn signs, and I saw acre after acre, mile after mile of Trump signs. You almost never saw a Hillary sign driving through. And I think the same is true outside almost any metropolitan area in America.
Yeah.
That was what was going on. And a lot of us, I include myself in this list, said, well, you know, lawn signs don't vote.
Yeah.
That's not where people actually live.
Yeah. And they also said crowds don't vote.
Right.
So I think we all learned some lessons here. You can't deny that Trump drew and still draws big crowds, and they are enthusiastic. And I think a lot of the press assumed that that wasn't going to translate to votes, but it sure did.
And it continues to translate now. And I want to talk about the fact that of this news cycle that we're in right now about in the context of Brett Kavanaugh. Our reporters who've gone to the rallies in the last couple of days have been asking almost everyone in the crowd they can find, what do you think of Brett Kavanaugh? What do you think of Brett Kavanaugh? And they cannot find a single person that thinks that Brett Kavanaugh should not be confirmed to the Supreme Court. They can't find a single person who believes that Christine Blasey Ford is either telling the truth or is giving a compelling enough story. And it breaks entirely along the fact that the president is out there saying that Brett Kavanaugh needs to be confirmed. He's made it into this tribal argument. You use the example in the book, the famous example of the president saying he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and his support might go up. What is your sense on what it took for a lot of the voters that you talk to go from supporting a candidate to then believing everything, literally everything that he says?
I think one of the key things that we'll have to look for going forward is whether Trump has really started a movement here, or whether his support is rooted more in a cult of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might be the latter. I could be wrong. But people can disagree with him on any manner of issues. And they just like him.
Mm-hmm.
They like how he gets up every day and, you know, starts kicking ass with his tweets and raising hell and insulting his enemies and sticking it to the press. They love that. And I think in that sense, culture bests economics. Because Trump, even though it's a good economy, there in some ways he hasn't delivered for the working class. You know, he said he was going to curb the deficit in the campaign, but his budget adds $7 trillion to the deficit. He said he was going to hold the line on Medicare and Medicaid, but there are deep cuts there. So one could say that that doesn't translate into the vested interests of his supporters. But it doesn't matter. They just love him.
Specific to the characters that you focused on, mm-hmm. and you followed up with a number of them more recently, and checking in, two questions. Have any of them questioning their support for President Trump? And has the Trump presidency been good for them in a broader sense, other than just winning? Has it been good for their lives?
Well, of the 12 people that I focus on in the book at this hour, 11 are say that if the election were to be held tomorrow, they would vote for him enthusiastically. Only one has slipped into the undecided category. Mm-hmm. So I think one key barometer going forward is what is there a ceiling on Trump's base or not? And but as I said, he mostly can do no wrong for them.
Mm-hmm. And has the Trump presidency delivered on the promise of jobs coming back, of fighting for workers? He talked about the need to change trade deals to benefit them and to raise wages. I mean, he's trumpeting the economic gains in the Dow all the time. But is that relevant for most of these people?
I don't know how many of them have are heavy into the stock market. I don't think that many.
Yeah,
but they trumpet, as it were, some of his policies. I mean, you know, the economy's is going gangbusters. He inherited a good economy, mm-hmm. but they don't want to get into that debate of how much credit Obama deserves. You know, they like the tax cut, even though I'm not sure how much of it actually shows up in their paychecks. They like that he's cut back on red tape and regulations. I think the trade is a bit of a double-edged sword. They like the America First doctrine,
mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure they like the prospect of trade wars.
I want to ask about Pennsylvania more broadly because it is actually ground zero for the Democratic hopes of taking back Congress. There are a number of districts in Pennsylvania where Democrats feel like they can win. I think mostly in the Philadelphia area, Pittsburgh area as well, had a pretty famous special election a couple months ago that delivered for the Democrats. And the congressman that you talked to at some length in this book, Lou Barletta, is now the Republican nominee for Senate. It looks like he's going to get blown out by Bob Casey. He's really not in the mix. The president encouraged him to run, really wanted him in that race, and was encouraging and feeling like if Barletta wins, he definitely wins. It doesn't look like that's happening. Do you think is that a sign of a broader backlash? Is that the resistance in action, or is there something else going on based on your reporting that might explain why Pennsylvania's politics might be flipping back toward blue?
Well, I noticed that Lou is down in the polls. Trump's going back there next week to Erie.
Right.
He's the congressman for Luzerne County, the county I focused on. And he's not as well known in the western part of the state, so I think they're hoping that Trump will showcase him more out there. When you talk to my people who are still with Barletta, they say, you know, the easy comeback is, well, the polls were wrong,
right.
Trump too, you know. But I don't know that it's a sign of that Trump has peaked or that there's erosion. I think it may be more focused on Barletta's pros and cons.
When you look toward 2020 with President Trump, we presume running for re-election. It's hard to imagine a primary challenger being successful given the personality that he has exhibited and the way he's taken over the Republican Party. There's no distance between him
right.
and the Republican Party these days. What are the broader lessons that you see for politicians in terms of how he was able to be successful, what he was able to do to bring out a coalition that really hadn't been visible even in previous election cycles?
Well, I mean, it's still stunning that he won, isn't it?
Yes, 2 years later.
Trump behaves as president of his base rather than president of the country. He's a divider.
Yeah.
He's not a unifier. And I just wonder if there's not political hay to be made for Democrats in putting up a candidate who would essentially run on a unification platform. That would take it wouldn't be Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. It might be Biden, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But we're so polarized. Trump in his acceptance speech on election night said that he was going to try to unite the country, but he never has. And he goes out to these political rallies in his favorite states and continues to behave as the president of the base. So I to me, the stark polarization of the country, it was divided before Trump, yes, but he's, I think, increased the divide. And I just wonder whether there's not, it would become a leadership issue. Mm-hmm. Who can really lead the country into healing its wounds?
And is the view among at least the folks that you talked to for this book that it's okay that he's only talking to his base, that the other folks aren't listening anyway, that they're out to get him,
yeah.
or do they find any fault in the fact that he does not unite as a president?
Most of them don't. They don't blame him. They say that the other side is just as responsible for the divisions as Trump is, and they hate him, and there's nothing he can do anyway. But to me, it looks like a leadership issue that there might be potential for a Democrat who started to talk that way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think?
I think the question you raise, I get asked it all the time: what happens next? Right,
yeah.
And I think the we're not going to know for some time whether Trump was a one-off, if it's just a pure cult of his personality, or if there's a way to move that ahead.
Well, we'll know more after the midterms.
Sure.
That'll be the midterms are a referendum on Trump's presidency.
And he, unlike most politicians, welcomes that. He says, bring it on.
Yeah.
He wants that. He is still, interested in your take as we close up today, he's still confident in that base. He still thinks of them. He sees that map of red every time he speaks.
Yeah.
The county map, not the state map.
Well, behaving as president of the base rather than wanting to expand your base wouldn't appear to be a winning reelection strategy. If his base tops out at, 35, 36?
Maybe 40,
Maybe 40%. But at a time when our two of the last three presidents have not won the popular vote, you don't need to get to 50% anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's room for a credible third-party candidate that might take even more slice of the vote. But if you look at the 2016 results, the Libertarians and the Green Party had more than enough total vote to make the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Trump thinks he can maybe win with 40, 45.
It will be fascinating, and I look forward to you following up with some of these folks to see what the sequel says.
Okay.
We all want to know what happens next. Ben Bradley Jr., the book is The Forgotten, How the People of One Pennsylvania County Elected Donald Trump and Changed America. Congratulations on the book, Ben. Great to see you.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you. That does it for this edition of Powerhouse Politics. I'm ABC News political director Rick Fine. We'll catch you next time.